KALW.
He was so happy to be a father. He loved his kids, especially his little girl. He loved his kids, but that little girl had him wrapped around his finger.
The aunt of a man shot and killed by police in 2017 wants people to know the family he left behind.
He wasn't that monster that they had put out there.
A look at the aftermath of police violence. Then we go to Richmond and ask people what's on their minds this election season.
Well, right now with the coronavirus and all, they haven't been cleaning the streets, and there's really a lot of trash around that needs to be cleaned.
Plus, a new author reading from our podcast, New Arrivals.
The book is part memoir about my experience as a startup founder and software engineer, and part cultural criticism of the tech industry as a whole.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Family members of people who are killed can usually receive support from the state's Victim Compensation Board. That includes counseling services and money to cover funeral costs. But when people are killed by law enforcement, family members don't get those same resources. That's what Rosie Chavez learned after her nephew, Jacob Dominguez, was killed by law enforcement in 2017. So without help from the state, she found her own support network. KLW's Holly J. McDeed brings us her story.
Rosie Chavez spent most of her career working in the recovery field for people with addiction. Now she's a community organizer. She's busy and says she'll rest once she sees justice. Her nephew, Jacob Dominguez, was shot and killed by San Jose police in 2017. Since then, she's become a kind of voice for Jacob and the family he left behind.
But I'm going to keep saying my nephew's name, and I'm going to keep him out there, and I'm going to keep telling his story. And that's where it's going to be. They're not going to forget who Jacob Dominguez was and what he meant to us and his kids.
Rosie says losing someone killed by law enforcement is a unique kind of pain.
It's not been easy because, again, we're not considered the victims. They just kind of throw us out there and, okay, oh, well, I'll deal with it. And, you know, these kids are part of this community, too. You know, they have to grow up here.
She comes from a big family, and as a teenager, she helped raise Jacob.
And Jacob was a good kid. He was, my first nephew, of course. I was 13 when my sister had him, so he was like my little brother as well. Took care of him. You know, it was mainly women raising him. It was me, his mom, my mom, me, my other sister.
She says everyone would comment about how respectful her nephew was, but it was clear Jacob missed his dad.
Dad was in and out of his life, and it wasn't consistent like Jacob would want it.
Jacob struggled to cope without his father around, and he started getting in trouble with the law. He spent time in juvenile hall, and when he was 19 years old, he was incarcerated for armed robbery.
And it was sad because I worried about him, how he was going to come back, how he's going to adjust, because he did six or seven years. And he had a hard time adjusting. He came back, he had his wife, they started making a family. Took him a while because of a felon, he couldn't find a job.
So Rosie helped him get a job working with glass and installing windows. He moved up to the ranks of foreman, and his wife was in school to become a nurse.
And it was one of their goals and their journeys that they had set for each other, like, this is what we're going to do. And he supported her, and he would be that, I'm going to be a stay-at-home daddy, you know. And he would when he was not working. And it was a dream for them.
Jacob had three kids, two boys and one girl.
So he was so happy to be a father. He loved his kids, especially his little girl. He loved his kids, but that little girl had him wrapped around his finger. She had him. She could do no wrong.
But he was also struggling with addiction. He had stayed in a Christian recovery home shortly before his death, and Rosie says he was trying to change his life. She remembers how on their last phone call together, Jacob asked his auntie to pray for him.
I said, I always do, and I always will.
Then at 4:30 in the morning on September of 2017, she got a call from a family member saying Jacob had been shot and killed by police. It was all over the news. Jacob's mom was working the graveyard shift at Safeway, and Rosie rushed there.
She was on her break. I can remember her walking with two things of milk I told her, did you see the news? And she's like, what, what? I said, Jacob, they shot him. They killed him. She looked in the store and she just, like, she was halfway in the door and halfway out. I remember she looked at her manager or the boss or whoever was in charge. She goes, I gotta go. They just killed my son. And she just started screaming.
Soon after that, San Jose Chief of Police Eddie Garcia held a press conference. He listed crimes Jacob had allegedly committed over a 9-day period before he was killed. Vehicle theft, a drive-by shooting, an armed robbery at a gas station.
At some point, we need to make sure that this crime spree ended, and unfortunately ended with a tragic consequence.
Garcia said an officer shot Jacob during a traffic stop when he lowered his hands out of view. Police say they thought he was reaching for a weapon.
So we knew that that wasn't true. So when it came out in the press conference that he was unarmed, that even made us more upset because we knew it in our hearts that we knew our, we knew him.
Jacob's family held a vigil. At that event, a woman came up to Rosie and handed her a card for a group called Silicon Valley Debug. It's an organization that supports families of people involved in the criminal justice system and families of those killed by police. A few months later, Rosie connected with them. She says Debug helped her through the whole process of what came next, from filing a civil suit to putting in requests for police records.
So I think that helped me with my grieving as well, as just my hurt, my anger, and then it just turned into motivation to want to make changes, you know? And I thought about my kids, my grandkids, his kids, you know, we're growing up here, you know, this community, you know, let's get involved in making changes. I just see how the system really needs to change. There's so much that needs to change. I mean, nobody really understands it like we do.
Since the killing of George Floyd, Rosie and over 15 other families have held protests and rallies in San Jose, sharing the stories of people they've lost to police violence.
It felt really good and overwhelming. I was like wanting to cry. Actually, I did cry because all these people showed up to protest and were saying our loved ones' names and telling their story. So that felt good, and it was feeling like I was felt like maybe a little hopeful that some things will change, and maybe it's now. Unfortunately, George Floyd had to lose his life, and I feel like this was an opportunity to show the community here in our city that it's happening here. We have our own George Floyds.
Rosie says this advocacy work is her way of mourning for Jacob. But the rest of the family grieves in other ways. Jacob's grandmother visits the cemetery where he's buried every single day. His oldest son is 10 years old and quiet. He wants to know if the officer who killed his dad will go to jail. His other two kids don't know their dad was killed by police.
His baby girl really thinks that he's going to come home, you know. She wants Santa to bring him home, so she keeps asking. She just wants to hug her daddy. She misses him. And that's what I'm saying, the trauma that it's done to the family. It's done a lot.
Some days Rosie still expects Jacob to walk through the door. And she says it's overwhelming sharing his story over and over. But she wants people to understand who he was. She's grateful that before he was killed, Jacob was interviewed for a documentary called Making of a Gangster about why people join gangs.
I didn't know how to act. I just kind of took it out. I went to the streets. I went to the streets and looked for love and felt loved out there. And that's when everything went downhill real fast for me.
It really humanized who Jacob was. And after the cops had killed him, it was the only thing we had to actually prove that he wasn't the person they said he was. He wasn't that monster that they had put out there.
One of Silicon Valley Debug's demands is to shift funds away from law enforcement and towards immediate and long-term support for people and families affected by police violence. Now Rosie is pushing for that on behalf of families like hers.
I tell myself I'm going to do this as long as I can. I like what I do, and I like helping the people that I help, and
a lot of times I feel like I see a lot of little Jacobs in a lot of the people I help, you know? And so I tell everybody, as long as I have breath, I won't stop fighting. I won't stop fighting for change and for my nephew.
For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Holly is KALW's justice reporter. You can find more of her stories at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In these weeks leading up to the elections, we'll be talking to people in the Bay Area's five counties with the lowest voter turnout rates. Today, we go to Contra Costa County, to the city of Richmond. The county is voting on a couple of measures. One is Measure X, a proposed sales tax to keep funding the local hospital and social services. The city of Richmond is voting on a tax on certain businesses to help pay for city services like 911 service and homeless services. So, what's on people's minds there? I asked Isabella Bloom. She's a reporter with Richmond Confidential and a student reporter at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. She went out and talked to people in Richmond about what they're thinking about.
Yeah, so I went down to the Iron Triangle and I went to the farmers market, which is off of 23rd Street. And I wouldn't say it's very bustling there, but there's like a steady stream of people kind of coming in and out. Ernest Bafajan was talking about this concern about healthcare, and he kind of tied that into this homelessness problem also in the Iron Triangle.
Basically, it's about healthcare. Most people don't have health insurance, and a lot of people are homeless. You know, homelessness is an issue that concerns me a lot. Yeah, rent, you know, people can't afford to pay rent. That's one of the reasons why, you know, families are breaking apart.
And who else did you speak to?
So I also talked to one resident who's a gunshot victim, Sean Lee, who is actually from North Richmond.
Safety. I'm a gunshot victim. I was shot about 5 years ago, five times. So safety, public safety is a real big issue for me.
Okay, so what we're hearing so far is healthcare, public safety. Who else did you talk to?
So I also talked to Jill Miller. She was saying that she was worried about the dumping and the cleanliness of her neighborhood.
Well, right now with the coronavirus and all, they haven't been cleaning the streets, and it's really, you know, a lot of trash around that needs to be cleaned. And then safety, you know, it's like if you're not home all the time, you're worried about your place.
And I also talked to Najari Smith, who is a co-owner of Rich City Rides Bike Shop down in the Iron Triangle. Najari Smith is also running for Richmond City Council in District 5.
When we do a park cleanup in the park that's like two blocks away from this bike shop, why is it that for the past 8 years that we've been doing these park cleanups, dumping will occur like within that same month? You know, it's not like litter. It's not like just a piece of paper here, a piece of paper there. It's like living room sets and bedroom sets and TV, you know.
And there's nothing on the Richmond ballot this year that addresses illegal dumping, so this might have to fall on the city council. Where are people looking for solutions then?
Yeah, so Najari Smith was saying part of the problem is not having a prosecutor in Richmond to follow up on this dumping, and so there's no repercussions or fees.
So you could totally bypass having to take it to the dump and pay that fee, and you just dump it here. And, of course, the city has to pay money in order to haul that stuff away. And with our city having over 50 beautiful parks, it sucks to have 50 beautiful parks all getting dumped on.
And there's this assumption or even stigma that residents are dumping and trashing their own neighborhood, But he said that it's mostly people from outside of Richmond who are dumping illegally. But he also mentioned he doesn't have any direct proof of that.
You also covered the West Contra Costa Unified School Board elections. What is going on in that race?
When I was talking to some of these candidates for the school board, they kept mentioning Prop 15 to me. Prop 15 will increase taxes on commercial and industrial properties worth more than $3 million. And most of that revenue isn't just going to a general fund, but it's going to go toward school districts and community colleges. And in West Contra Costa, where they have this huge budget deficit, they really need this to pass. The big thing this year is that it's the first time that the election is divided into these five trustee areas. Until this year, people who run for the school board in West Contra Costa can run for any seat no matter where they live in the district. But as of this year, you have to run for a specific seat in like a geographical area in which you live.
And you spoke to school board member Consuelo Lara about this idea. Can you tell us what she said?
So Consuelo Lara told me that she felt this division, how they drew up the trustee areas on a map, was racist because they created the communities based on race in the school district. And the data was based on a census from 10 years ago, so it's not fair or accurate. And it shouldn't be racially decided for the map. It should be based on schools and school families. So if there's like a middle school that feeds into a certain high school, that's how they should be dividing up the map.
Okay. Isabella Bloom, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Isabella Bloom is a student reporter at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism and Richmond Confidential, a KELW elections coverage partner organization. You can find more of their coverage at richmondconfidential.org. Thanks to Victor Tense for his help producing that interview. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, it's the latest episode from our New Arrivals podcast, hosted by KELW's Lisa Morehouse.
This is New Arrivals, a socially distanced book tour with Bay Area authors. Wendy Liu lives in San Francisco. Her book, Abolish Silicon Valley, came out in April.
The book is part memoir about my experience as a startup founder and software engineer, and part cultural criticism of the tech industry as a whole. And here's one of my favorite parts about moving to San Francisco after having sold my startup. It's 2019, and I now live in San Francisco. There was a time when I wanted nothing more than to move here as part of the growing wave of tech professionals. Now, though, I have no inclination to work in the tech industry. Instead, I'm writing a book calling, only somewhat jokingly, for its abolition. It feels odd to be here again after my whiplash-inducing personal transformation. I don't see things the same way anymore, and I don't want the things I used to want. I walk past the offices of venture capital firms, and where I might have once responded with reverence, I now only feel disgust. The constant startup billboards for cryptocurrency exchanges or marijuana delivery apps are sickening. Parks and transit centers that would otherwise be perfectly lovely are emblazoned with the logos of tech giants, serving as constant reminders of a system that prioritizes corporate greed over public good. And most of all, that all this is shot through with flashes of staggering poverty is infuriating.
That was Wendy Liu reading from Abolish Silicon Valley. New Arrivals is produced by KALW Public Radio.
Lisa Morehouse produced that episode. You can find more from the series and learn how to subscribe by going to kalw.org/newarrivals. And before we go, here's some new music from a local artist. This is Maya Songbird from San Francisco, and this is from their latest album, Love Bites, Volume 1.
Fool's Rushing. Kiss me like I'm familiar. Search me like I am similar. Love me like I'm peculiar. That's the way it is. And if I dare to sit and stare,
today's Cross Currents team includes Scott Carroll, Sonia Narong, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Lisa Ramreka. Our engineers are James Rowlands, production manager is Shireen Adil, managing editor is David Boyer, news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
And stare. You must know.